Here's a fun little paradox for you. The people who are accomplishing the most are usually the ones giving themselves the least credit. And as it turns out, that's not a personality quirk. It is a setup for toxic productivity and burnout. Today's guest, Risa Williams, is a psychotherapist, productivity coach, and best-selling author who's here today to talk about a deceptively simple concept: tiny wins count. Not as a feel-good consolation prize, but as a legit neurological strategy. Because if you can't remember what you did, you won't believe you did it. And if you don't believe you did it, hello, imposter syndrome. Here we go. Risa, one of the many things we have in common is the way we feel about the importance of celebrating. We've talked about this a number of times, how driven people, ambitious people, successful people, and neurodivergent people have a tendency to just check the box, check the box, check the box, and move on to the next thing. And I think this is one of the major contributors to the fact that many of us experience burnout. Yeah. So we are here today to talk about why it's so important to redefine productivity and celebrate everything. So where shall we start in unpacking tiny wins?
So in so much of the work I do with people, it's about getting to the feeling place, right? It's not so much about attaining the thing, you know, like getting to the top of the mountain is great, but like, how do you want to feel when you get to the top of the mountain? Can you actually let yourself practice that feeling of what is it you want to feel when you're standing there looking at the vista thinking, I got to the top of this mountain. What did I want to feel when I get here? You know, and can I feel it now? Can I allow myself to feel it? So part of this whole tiny wins practice, I call it, is we need to practice the feelings we want to feel in little blips so that when we get to the big things, our brain knows how to feel those things in big amounts. We cannot feel them in big amounts if we haven't practiced the feeling along the way. I know that sounds so simple and commonsensey, but people don't do this at all.
Well, actually, I have so many thoughts about this and some feels too, because in my experience working with neurodivergent business owners and as a therapist prior to that, I think people are very familiar with negative feelings.
Oh, exactly. And they're practicing the other part of that.
Exactly. And we understand that the brain's negativity bias that we experience, acknowledge, and remember negative experiences and the negative feelings that go along with them, because it's an evolutionary bias that keeps us safe. Right. You know, if you have a horrible experience, you don't want to repeat that. Your brain needs you to remember that, needs you to pass it on through your genes to future generations. But positive experiences, they don't contribute to survival. So it's almost like the odds are stacked against us neurologically and evolutionarily. But also, I think folks with ADHD, many of us, most of us, maybe all of us, have experienced a lot of negative feedback throughout our growing up years. Even if we are successful, we'll get, why did you do it that way? What made you say that? And why can't you just whatever? Or how did you figure that out? It always sounds like an attack, and we tend to be sensitive to criticism and rejection. So I'm wondering, like, how do we convert people from being so attuned to negative feedback and negative thoughts about themselves and begin to seduce them, if you will, into thinking there's a good reason for you to learn this skill and it's not indulgent, which I'm going to guess most people think it is.
Right? Or they think it's conceited. I think there's a lot of dismissiveness. And that's what I want to address, because dismissiveness can be really poisonous to our brains, right? We don't like the feeling of being dismissed by other people. And often what I'm hearing you describe, a lot of us who grew up neurodiverse, there was a lot of dismissiveness.
Yes.
There was not a lot of validation. Yep. Like, oh, you did this differently. Good job. Wow, you're so clever. You figured out a new way to do that. It was more like, well, that's not the way you're supposed to do it. Like, you know, and that's very dismissive. So I think a good starting place would be, are you dismissing yourself on a daily basis? Mm. Are you going through your day and the voice in your head is very dismissive? And this is what I'd like to point out, especially with my super intelligent, highly functional high achievers. You may be very dismissive to yourself. You may have set the bar so high, like you have to do so many things at such a grandiose level to even give yourself a compliment, you know, or even give yourself a pat on the back. And that's created this kind of like toxic dismissiveness inside of ourselves where we cannot give ourselves credit for making a sandwich. We cannot give ourselves credit for taking a daily walk because we set the bar so high. In order to get a compliment, even for ourselves, it has to be like, I have to run a marathon to give myself a compliment. That is the piece that if you start changing it, it will up your happiness. It will up the way you feel about yourself. It will suddenly make you feel a whole lot more confident. Suddenly making a sandwich, depending on the way you're talking to yourself, may give you more of that dopamine hit and sense of pride than even running the marathon, even though that's completely like bananas when you hear me say that, right? Mm. But it's counterintuitive because it's the way you are treating yourself and acknowledging yourself and being a witness to yourself, a kind witness, and saying, wow, you did that. Good job figuring that out, right? Good job moving forward a little bit. And we often are very good at doing this with other people or kids around us. And the voice that we use to ourselves is like a completely different person who's like so harsh, so mean, so demanding and dismissive. I guess that's the word I'd want you to kind of like ruminate on this week. Like, do I dismiss myself a lot? Do I get to the end of my goal and completely dismiss that I did any of it? And I know I suffered from this for years, and it turned into what I would call imposter syndrome. And I think a lot of us suffer from different levels of imposter syndrome, but you'll see this a lot with high achieving people is that they kind of don't believe that they did the thing they did. You know, they kind of don't believe even looking at their own resume or someone will bring up in a meeting, you won that award, that's amazing or whatever. And there's a part of them that never really believes it. And it's my belief that we have to practice that feeling of believing we did it and believing, hey, you know, that took 2,000 steps to do. That was me doing every single little step. That was not another person. That was not magic. I actually did a bazillion little steps to do this thing. And so now I'm going to acknowledge it. Yeah, you know what? That did take 2,000 steps. I was there the whole time and I did each one of them despite not wanting to do a lot of them, you know?
It reminds me of a joke that I have sometimes, and I say it very tongue in cheek and I say it with my sarcasm, but I will sometimes say, yeah, as a matter of fact, I am a big deal. And I'm saying it in kind of a silly way, but I'm wanting to move closer towards recognizing that some of the things I do are pretty freaking amazing and actually impressive. It's so interesting when you think about, and I think the more intelligent you are, especially for folks that are gifted, a lot of people I have worked with and work with are twice exceptional. So they're gifted and ADHD. Mm-hmm. And it's like, if you have always been able to do things that are hard, maybe not even possible for many other people, that's kind of your baseline. That doesn't seem like a big deal to you because that's the level you function at. You know, we don't think I function at a very high level. So that means I do a lot of things worth celebrating. It's the only thing we know. And I think most people tend to take whatever they do, whatever they have done, whatever they're able to do. Most people seem to have the bias that it's not a big deal because anybody can do it. I have seen this with so many gifted folks, Risa, where I say, I don't think you really have any idea how exceptional you are. And they kind of bristle at that. It's almost like it makes them feel self-conscious. It makes them feel...
It makes them feel weird and uncomfortable. Weird.
Yeah. But it's like, the thing is that being exceptional doesn't mean you're a weirdo, doesn't mean you're an outcast, doesn't mean nobody can relate to you. It means that you have abilities and skills that are an exception rather than the norm. And if you don't recognize that, you just keep ratcheting up the expectations so that nothing's ever worth celebrating. And exactly. I cannot tell you the number of people who've said to me, why would I make a big deal out of that? That doesn't even count. That's nothing. And it's like, well, how's that working for you? I mean, honestly, I mean, you can think however you want about your accomplishments, but how do you think it's affecting you to invalidate or dismiss all of your accomplishments? Does that make you feel motivated and energized and excited about doing more? Or are you just hooked onto the treadmill where you never get to get off, but you're not enjoying a single step?
Treadmill. I like that phrase. But it's true. It's like we're talking about the feeling place, right? Mm-hmm. So ideally, we're accomplishing things because they make us feel better. Like we want to do fun things or exciting things with our lives because we want to feel those fun, exciting feelings. And I think the treadmill you're talking about is people just keep raising the bar, cranking up the stress, feeling stressed out, getting to the end, feeling stressed out about that, dismissing it, and then adding more stress because now we're taking on another goal. And what's going to happen over time, this leads us to burnout usually. It leads us to a big crash because our brains can only handle so much of this. There's no reward in sight. There's no feeling reward in sight. And so, yes, you can get your brain to get you through two or three of these, but at a certain point, your brain will say, wait a minute, I signed up for this because I thought there was a reward. I thought there was like a feeling reward, you know, going to happen. And that's sort of the feeling of burnout that starts to happen. And it can build and build and build until your brain and body are like kind of putting the brakes on everything and saying, no more. Why are we doing this to ourselves? You're only beating me up more when I get to the end. So why should I keep going? And I also want to point out a different thing. We can be exceptional at lots of things, but there's always a cost, right? Which means like we're struggling sometimes with sometimes things that are very quote unquote easy or simple for other people, right? Yep. Like the example I always give is you can go, you know, write a novel and be amazing at that and publish a novel or novel after novel. But then at home, maybe you're not able to do the dishes or you're not able to finish grocery shopping or stuff is piling up or you're not even sending that email back to someone you really care about. Because everything has a cost, right? And I think what happens is we're putting all our energy into these big things, thinking we're going to get the big feeling reward, and we're not able to motivate ourselves to even do the upkeep of the everyday stuff. So what does all this mean? Well, my idea of tiny wins is we need to redefine what a tiny win is, because I don't think people are thinking tiny enough. I want to push people to take away the idea of giant wins are the only way you can get any kind of good feelings and make it so what if tiny wins were so ridiculously tiny that we started to give ourselves credit for almost anything we're doing? And this is where people bristle, especially people who have the built-in belief that I only have worth if I produce something super huge and amazing. This is where I really challenge them to look at that underlying belief. And then we're going to make it so easy for you to get a win. And that's where people really want to push back and say, well, that's nothing. That's when that dismissive voice will start to emerge. And maybe this is a good litmus test for anyone listening, right? So what would you count as a tiny win? What would you count as a tiny win, let's say, in the morning time? Maybe it's like you get out of bed, instead of rushing around, you take a minute. And you think, oh, I'm not rushing today. That's a tiny win. I'm going to count that. Or, oh, look at me. I left enough time and I'm getting the kids to school on time. Maybe that's your tiny win. I want you to go really tiny and start thinking about what are these little things that are usually hard for me that are like everyday things where I could be giving myself a whole lot more praise and a whole lot more soothing and kindness for just getting through it. And the way I started to counter my own imposter syndrome, which was like a chronic history of doing a lot of things in a lot of different fields and never acknowledging any of it and burning out a lot, which was every day I'd start writing down 3 to 5, like a bullet list of anything I did, even on a really, really slow day. And on slow days, it's sometimes the biggest challenge to write something down. especially if you're a very goal-oriented person, because that's when you really don't want to give yourself credit. But it'll be something like, I sent off that email I've been avoiding. I remembered to update my income or whatever. I spent a minute and talked to my kids. It can literally be anything. And I started forcing myself to write down any step I was doing in any category in my life that I wanted to monitor. And what happens is when you do this over time, you start to see that little things are adding up. And you also start to see that on the weeks you felt were really slow, or the months you felt were terrible months, like I didn't do anything that month. What a waste of a month. You go back and you read each day to yourself in your own brain to show yourself proof of what you actually did. I know this sounds kind of tedious to a lot of people, but it has this big, profound effect on you. Even within a month of doing this, people will say, oh my God, I had no idea. My brain just erased. I did all that stuff because I wasn't counting it because it wasn't a big, giant thing. But on weeks that are even slow to you, you may have the flu. You may still make meals for everyone, do the laundry, do your job, get yourself from point A to point B. And can you give yourself a little praise and give yourself a little credit by each week taking stock of what you've just done and noticing, like just notice and acknowledge it in your own mind? It's kind of revolutionary. It kind of changes the way you relate to yourself over time.
Well, something I hear a lot of folks talking about in both the ADHD community and also in the trauma community, folks that work with individuals with trauma history, is this concept about self-abandonment. Mm-hmm. Folks who deal with individuals who have come out of narcissistic abuse situations, domestic violence. So a lot of self-abandonment. And what I'm recognizing as you have been sharing, Risa, is that it's not just like shrinking down the size of what we consider a win so that the tiniest possible thing still counts, but it's actually redefining what a win is, period, big or small. Exactly. Because what you're sharing is that sometimes the win is something you're doing, but you're dismissing it. You're not acknowledging it. Sometimes the win is something you ordinarily do, but you are choosing not to do as an act of self-care. Yeah. And sometimes it's shifting the way you think about something that's a win. So how do you, which all falls in line with, we need to be more of a human being and less of a human doing.
Exactly.
So does it include things that you're doing that you wouldn't give yourself credit for and things that you are not doing because they're just a habit that doesn't really help you, as well as mindset shifts? Or is it only related to things that are physical tasks?
It can be any category. And I always encourage people to have categories that are about feelings, right? Mm-hmm. About how you felt because of the thing. So it could be, I stopped myself from overworking today because I was getting stressed out. Mm-hmm. That's often one of my tiny wins, especially on rough weeks. Like I took a minute and just sat still for 10 seconds. It's about not doing in that case. My tiny win is about not doing. It's about feeling. It's about taking care of myself. So in all my books, I talk about how one of our main goals has to be self-care. And what that means to me is lowering our stress intentionally, like actively. So a lot of my tiny wins are related to just stress management, just self-care and checking in with myself. And then some of my wins are about doing things, but they're about doing kind of ordinary things that I dismiss a lot, that I think everybody should be doing that. You know, I have these thoughts, and I think in having to write 3 to 5 things every day, it challenges you because you are not always going to be doing giant, amazing things. If you have to do this every day, if someone said this is a rule, what you're going to find is you get a little creative about the stuff you're putting down. And then you get a little creative about seeing that as a win. And over time, this builds a sort of self-kindness and compassion and understanding of who you are and everything you're doing to walk yourself forward, not just goal related. We get a little monofocused on, well, I'm not making X amount of dollars and I haven't bought the house yet and I haven't become a Pulitzer Prize winner or whatever. whatever the thing you're monofocused on that is spelling to you, I'm a success. There are so many things you're doing. You are such a multidimensional, complicated person who is trying to balance so many areas of self-development, learning, taking care of people, taking care of yourself. And you're probably not witnessing this actively. So I'm encouraging people to become a more active witness to themselves. Like, this is your life. You're living it. Almost adopt a scientific mindset towards that. You know, scientists track things when they're doing an experiment, right? So Charles Darwin is a good example people always use of this kind of daily logging, because he was so into logging everything he did, walks, thoughts he had, who he talked to. He made this kind of bulletless log every day. But I think it's kind of getting into a more scientific observer of your own life. And what happens is you get curious and you think, you know, that email I sent to somebody about this job, I wonder where that's going to end up. I wonder when I flip through my journal at the end of the year, what month that's going to turn up, or what that's going to lead to, or this event I'm doing, I wonder what that's going to lead to next. It's this like lighter kind of curious voice that kicks in. That's this gentle observer, right? Like, look at you doing that. Look at you. Where does this path go? Where does this step lead? Are we going to keep doing this in October? I don't know. Let's see where I get to. And that is a very interesting thing that starts developing inside of you. That's an antidote maybe to that other voice, which is dismissive and harsh and like, you can't count any of that. None of it matters. It's more like, I wonder where this is going to go. I wonder what I'm capable of. I wonder where this tiny step is going to lead me. I wonder how many tiny wins I can get this week. And you kind of feel the difference inside. Maybe even as I'm saying these things, maybe you're starting to feel, ooh, that's a little bit of a shift to a gentler, kind of nicer way to talk to myself.
I'm even thinking that making it kind of gaming it.
Yeah.
So that you, because you're right. It reminded me of, I did a gratitude practice for a long time and had the gratitude journal, and you had to write down, I think it was 3 things every morning and 3 things every evening, and what I'm grateful for. And I challenged myself to come up with new things every day. Because you very quickly realize, okay, friends, family, my health, I can't keep saying that.
I know.
So you start becoming more, and I know because you study and you write about and you teach about mindfulness, and I've been practicing Buddhism for many, many years, and mindfulness is so simple. It's being open to what actually is. It is being curious about what is, and it's being non-judgmental about what is. And so you're talking about really paying attention to ourselves in a mindful way where we are observing ourselves almost like a research subject. Or just, I mean, we would probably be kinder to any other, just any rando. Like, we would probably be more charitable. We would be more compassionate. We would be more forgiving. We would be more accepting. It's just, we don't apply that to ourselves. So just, oh, look at this human being going about her day. And whenever she makes something in the kitchen, she always immediately cleans up after herself. You know, she doesn't
it's
just let it pile
that
up.
Nice narration going on in your head instead of the harsh narration. Like, why can't you do the dishes? Oh, you haven't even done this and you haven't done that. That's sort of where our brains, a lot of us, are at every day, whether we're aware of it or not. But that's like the running dialogue. And so shifting, I like to liken it to the hero's journey, which is this archetype of, like, with every goal we take on or every project we take on, we're the hero and we're going on a quest. You know, and we're gonna hit roadblocks. Like, every hero hits roadblocks. Every hero hits hard points where they wanna give up and they're like, why am I doing this thing? I mean, you could even say that about doing the dishes, or you could say that about writing your
laundry,
book or whatever.
Especially laundry is a bugaboo for a lot of people with ADHD.
And we hit an all is lost moment.
Existence.
We hit that heroic, you know, moment where we're like, I give up. I don't want to do this. This is too hard. So usually in a story, there's a mentor figure that comes in right when you're at that breaking point and says, you've got this. You can do this. You've done this before. Look at this. We're going to do it this way and you're going to get through it. We need to become our own mentor. And the only way I've successfully done this for myself over time is by showing myself written proof on paper. Mm. And then by making myself reread all those steps over and over again till I almost become that character watching me on the path, saying, wait a minute, I remember last year we got really down and depressed at this point of writing a book, but here's what you did and you got around it this way. And I think the path ahead is going to be here and you just got to go here. It's like most of us in adulthood don't really have that mentor in real life. So we have to kind of invent that character and internalize it so it's following us. And the easiest way to do this is start tracking actually what you're doing on paper and then reread it. Give yourself credit. And like every month, force yourself to read every single page so that you're training your brain to remember, ooh, I did that. Ooh, look, I did that. Oh, I remember that day I did that. And you know, with ADHD, a lot of us, our memory, we struggle. We struggle just generally with remembering what we did yesterday, let alone what we did last month to set us up. Why we're here now is because of stuff we did last month and the month before that. And the month before that, I know with my brain, I struggle. And if you ask me to recount all the steps it took to get here where I am, if I haven't written that down somewhere and tracked it, I will just mush all those steps together into like one messy account of something. And this is what I find is true of my clients too. If I say, what did you do last year? How did you get to the end of your goal? They just mush everything together. And it's usually like a messy mix of negative, stressful stuff. And not a lot of acknowledgement of every day I did 10 minutes of this and every day I moved myself forward. And on that hard week when I had the flu, I still did this and this and this and this. Because we need to tell ourselves that story by writing it down and showing ourselves the story so that we can see ourselves from that outside perspective.
You know, you just helped me connect two things that I've never actually thought about in this way before, Risa. Ooh. And that is, a lot of folks have who are neurodivergent, like you and I, have imposter syndrome.
Yes.
You talk about it a lot. I talk about it a lot. And we also have oftentimes poor short-term memory and poor working memory. Mm. I'm just now realizing that one of the reasons I talked about the trauma and the negative feedback that so many of us have been given over our lifetime so that we don't feel that we deserve to celebrate things. Because we don't think we're doing anything spectacular. We're just focusing on all of our fuck ups and failures. Mm-hmm. But it's, of course, you would have imposter syndrome if you cannot remember the things that you've done and without tracking them and without acknowledging them and without celebrating them, with or without ADHD, you most definitely will forget them. I'm just really realizing
that's like a light bulb moment. It's like
progress. A huge contributor to imposter syndrome is that it's not because some people say, oh, it's just you don't think you deserve it. If you can't even remember it and you didn't acknowledge it and you didn't celebrate it, you do not have an accumulating body of evidence that you do, in fact, know what the hell you're doing.
Exactly. And that's exactly what I'm saying about witnessing and showing yourself proof, showing yourself written evidence in a scientific way that your brain can't refute. Because as you flip through those pages, you actually lived through those days and took those steps. And like you're saying, there is this weird kind of progress erasure, memory erasure our brains do, which, of course, would lead us to feel like imposters because we don't remember we took 10,000 steps to get to where we are. On top of it, let's circle back to what we said originally about people dismissing us, too. So even when we get to the end of the goal, here we are, we haven't remembered everything we did. We sort of have this foggy memory of like a lot of hard stuff that feels negative. Mm-hmm. On top of it, instead of getting praise and someone giving you a pat on the back, they're like, wow, okay, you did that, but why did you do it this way? And now we can't even remember why we did it that way because
we don't remember. Knew to begin with.
So that only reinforces what you're saying. And now I'm like connecting a lot of dots here. You know, in so many studies they've done about trauma, about ADHD, even about anxiety.
Yes.
They're saying like memory and, you know, executive functioning, all that stuff is tied together, right? And then I'm thinking there are so many studies about how writing stuff down helps our memory, right? Yep. Because it taps into the executive functioning. Mm-hmm, so I'm thinking maybe this is why possibly it works so well for me, is that I'm practicing that one skill that's activating that part of my brain that naturally is not turning on, right? So maybe it's even more crucial for people with executive functioning disorders to learn to write each day, even though we resist it because we really don't like doing it. A lot of us have sloppy handwriting. We don't like reading our own handwriting. But maybe this is the one skill we're avoiding strengthening that will actually help us and give us the boost we need to get through our days and to give ourselves a pat on the back more regularly.
And you've made it possible to not just go from passively listening to this conversation and having a few light bulb moments and connecting a few dots and saying, yeah, son of a gun, as much as I hate to admit it, she's right. And I should probably do this, because you have created a course that is very ADHD friendly and a book, a planner, so that, I mean, because it would be so easy for someone listening to this think, okay, well, yeah, I think that's probably a good idea. I should probably do that. Mm-hmm. And then either forget all about it or think, oh, yeah, but then how do I write it down? What do I write it down on? Could I do that on a digital thing and then go off in search of the perfect notebook and the perfect pen? And
We've all been there before.
Oh, yes. That's why we're giggling. But that's one of the things I really appreciate so much about you, Risa, is that you create things that help you and help others in very tangible, strategic and practical ways. Like if it doesn't go from idea to how do I implement this and how do I make this fun and easy, that I can always count on you for that. So we now have the Tiny Wins course and planner, right?
Yeah. And the manifestation of that happened exactly like you said. I kept telling people, hey, this really solved a lot of problems for me. I'm really excited about it. And they're like, yeah, write three things down. And nobody did it. And then I'm like, okay, but I have this system where I write in these little squares. So basically the planner looks like little squares for each day so that you're limited by the space, because I don't want you to write like a
constraint, folks.
Exactly. Yep. Exactly what Diane is always teaching, right? Parameters, like narrow it down. No free writing. This isn't a journal where I'm like, I feel so bad about this and we don't want any of that. Bullet points. It's literally a dot, and I'll write something like sent email. That's it. It's like two words. It takes me 5 seconds to do this every night. And I put it in a little tiny square. And so I made the planner because I'm like, okay, just follow this, because all you do is fill out the square each day. And at the bottom, it says wins of the week. And I kind of put the most exciting one. And then at the end of the month, it says reread this back to yourself and tell yourself which ones you're proud of. So it's like actively reviewing. But even this, Diane, I made the planner and like I gave it to a lot of people to try it out. Even my clients who were doing this with me in session were still not writing in the planner. And I'd say, what's your tiny win? Oh, I'm like, but did you write it down? They're like, no, I'm just telling you. I'm like, yeah, but we're going to take a second and like write it down together, because it's the writing part that I'm trying to explain is the part that's helping you. Even that was not going so well. So then I'm like, I'm going to make an online course, and you click a video and you write. It's very relaxing. You know, I'm giving you easy prompts and you're filling it out with me together.
Ah,
and it goes like
filling out your planner while you're
watching me. Yep. And I'm explaining, here's what you do in very easy way. And it has nice relaxing music. So you're kind of in this hypnotic state of like, I can do this. I'm going to count this as a win. And then, so you start the video on Monday, and then there's another video on Friday, where the end of the week video, you go back and you say, which of these things am I proud of? And that's kind of working, because now people are watching the videos and actually doing it. They get it now. So the videos walk you through a month of doing it, because I'm hoping after a month, I've sold you on the idea of doing this for yourself to build that witness voice. Because if you just do it once or twice, it's not really going to kick in that voice throughout your day. A lot of people are counting stuff like daily walks or making themselves lunch and sitting down and eating it. That is a tidy win. I want you to start giving yourself credit for all the ways you're taking care of yourself so that we reinforce it, because neuroscience studies show that our brain is always wanting that feeling of reward. And especially if you have ADHD, we're to that. And we don't get it as much as neurotypical people sometimes do. I mean, I think that's the difference, is that neurotypical people will tell me, well, you know, I mean, you don't like give yourself a little pat, like I folded the laundry. I'm like, no, I don't think that's a feature.
And we need it in my brain. How perverse is that? They do it and they don't need it. And we don't do it and we need it. Like, that makes no sense.
Yeah. And it was hard for us to do, so we needed even more, because we didn't want to do it at all. So we fought that inertia. We got over the hump. We did it. Now we need to at least write it down in the journal and say, at least I am writing this. I did the laundry today. I get a gold star. So give yourself a gold star more often. Don't dismiss this. Don't dismiss this whole idea. Try to like sit with it and think, you know, maybe there's some merit here of letting myself feel the good feelings on a daily basis rather than storing that feeling up for big things, you know, and then forgetting to feel it later.
Just challenge yourself to do it. And you maybe even if you're the oppositional type, I see you. Maybe you do it to prove her wrong.
Yeah, go ahead.
Maybe that you know what? It's like whatever floats your boat, whatever gets you going. We'll make sure you know how to reach out and let Risa know.
Because you can write down your tiny wins in an angry way. I'm doing this, but I don't like it.
It's like whatever it takes. And also, can I also say before we go that I really love that when you create something and you test it out. And if people aren't seeing the benefit right away, you don't get butthurt.
No.
You don't think, oh, if only they cared enough. You think, okay, how can I make this easier? How can I reduce any resistance, any friction? How can I make it possible? Because they need to experience the benefits of this. So that has led to so much innovation in your business and frankly, to probably many of your books as well.
Because you're like, okay,
I know this works. Yeah. You're like, I know this works. How do I make it ridiculously easy?
Exactly.
So that they'll give it a try, because once they will, I know it'll work for them too. And that is the creativity and also that drive of being an entrepreneur. It's like, I know this works. How do I make it ridiculously easy so that they can discover that for themselves? I love that.
I feel so seen, Diane. Like, thank you. Thank you for that. And I think we're both on that mission. Like, if it isn't working, it's just going to lead us to the next project where we figure out how it works for them. And then we figure out how it works for that other group of people, you know, and we just keep going until the toolbox is so big. There's got to be something that's working for somebody in there, is my theory. Indeed. Eventually. And it might be a lifelong mission.
Well, I have a feeling you're going to keep creating things. You're going to keep writing books and you're going to keep finding ways to help people just like us. And I'm here for it.
And I also want to wish you a happy birthday. That is a very big win, and I'm glad to be celebrating it with you today.
Thank you, friend.
Thank you.
Hey, before you go, tonight, just tonight, write down three things you did today. And I mean three things, not three impressive things. Did you send that email you've been avoiding? Write it down. Did you actually eat lunch sitting down or at all? That counts too. The goal is to catch yourself doing stuff your brain would otherwise erase. And this is how you start building a body of evidence against that dismissive voice in your head. If you want a little more help to make this a habit, there are links to Risa's Tiny Wins mini course and planner in the show notes.